I'm reading consecutively from third canto. I'm up to chapter 5. This morning we'll be reading from texts 41 and 42. Fits in very nicely with last night's topic, understanding God as a person. These verses are prayers by the demigods to the Supreme Lord, and they're contemplations on his lotus feet. I don't have feet if you're not a person. At least I never heard of such a thing. Feet without a person, or a person without feet. Personal conception of God. The prayers come in the course of a much larger discussion. The larger discussion is the process of creation. In the process of creation, it's really fascinating. From the time that there was nothing but the Lord, how there came into being some things. Like, what was the impetus for creation? In short, the impetus was the Lord's desire. He felt incomplete. He who was complete felt incomplete. Incomplete in the sense that some of my part and parcel living entities, they have a rebellious spirit. And they're, as a result, they're away from me. And they're very unhappy. I'd like them to have an opportunity to correct that difficult circumstance that they're in. Let me do something. So the something was to create a situation where they could rectify themselves. And that's the material creation. Along with the material creation, there's the good and the bad. There's the lessons of how much suffering it is to be apart from the Lord, but the good is the regulations that can then bring them back to him. Like Prabhupada sometimes describes, a prison house has two functions. To restrain vicious people from harming innocent people, a house of detention. But it's also a house of correction. So they can learn how to, once released from the prison, to be good citizens. To move about free society peacefully. It's a house of correction as well as a house of detention. And the emphasis in this process of creation is the correction part. And in order for creation to take place, there's the second part of the Lord's desire. There's a portion of his energy, his external energy, that has nothing to do. And he knows she wants something to do, so he gives her something to do, to serve him. Keep the living entities very busy, so they have no time to cause any difficulty directly for the Supreme Lord. No time. And so, with those two desires, the whole process of creation starts to unfold. Beginning with the desire of the Lord, then following the desire of the Lord, the glance of the Lord, with the glance of the Lord, the pradhan is then impregnated by the glance of the Lord with living entities and time. So it's like a chemistry experiment or something. You have a beaker and you put in some liquid and you add some things and then stuff starts to happen, stir, certain temperature. So there's pradhan, there's the time energy, there's the living entities. So the living entities have desires, and agitating the primordial pradhan, primordial soup, the living entities then start, the response from pradhan is, its undifferentiated state starts to differentiate. Like, you know, all the stuff that's undiscernible, what's what, elements start to manifest. So, the first element is our dear friend, false ego. False ego manifests. And then false ego in contact with the mode of goodness manifests our next best friend, the mind. And it goes through a whole series of things. The elements become manifests from gross, from subtle to gross. One of the things that's mentioned earlier is text number 30. The false ego is transformed into mind by interaction with the mode of goodness. All the demigods who control the phenomenal world are also products of the same principle, namely interaction of false ego and the mode of goodness. So now, you're all college students, so you know how to make a distinction, the following distinction. The part of creation that the Lord does is what's been described, the unfolding of the elements. And then the Lord manifests, Lord Garbhadakshaya Vishnu manifests Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma does the secondary creation. That is, he takes those elements and puts them together. And he performs the function of a prajapati, or progenitor of mankind. He produces varieties of beings. One of those varieties of beings that he produces is demigods. Because they have to control the affairs of the creation. He's not whimsical. He doesn't just create and it's all chaos. It's organized. And they're organizers. Demigods. So, this text 30 is putting the sarga and visarga together as if it's one thing, but it's two things. There's what the Lord does, and there's what Brahma does, following the order of the Lord. So, the elements separate, that's what the Lord does. Putting the elements in their individual manifestations together for the purpose of creation, that's what Brahma does, empowered by the Lord to do so. And the demigods are manifested by the same principle, false ego interacting with the quality of goodness. So now, the rest of the elements having separated and described, the demigods are offering prayers. The prelude verse is text 38. The controlling deities of all the above-mentioned physical elements are empowered expansions of Lord Vishnu. The subtext is, they're created by Brahma. To do that creation, Brahma requires ingredients, he requires intelligence, he requires a plan, he requires creative potency, he requires the sanction of the Lord. He's a servant. He has all these requirements that the Lord supplies, and then he serves. So he manifests these controlling deities, and they're empowered expansions of Lord Vishnu. They are embodied by eternal time and the external energy, and they are his parts and parcels. Because they were entrusted with different functions of universal duties and were unable to perform them, they offered fascinating prayers to the Lord as follows. So, Brahma did the same thing. Before he underwent creation, he prayed to the Lord for self-realization, for starters, and protection by the Lord that he would not fall prey to the misunderstanding of the false ego that he was the creator. And then the demigods, they're in the same position. The hint is that we should be thinking similarly. Demigods, they also had some impetus. Brahma was created with a certain purpose, of the Lord's purpose. He had an inspiration. Create a universe. I mean, we have an inspiration to do something. It's not create a universe. But to do something, we all have some inspiration to do something. But where's the ability to do that something? You know, if you buy into the material paradigm, you have the ability to do that something. Just go to school and learn how to do that something. And you know, it's just a 1, 2, 3. And it's yours. You can do it. And a devotional conception is not just a matter of going to school and getting a degree and then you can do something. It's something more fundamental. Like, you know, the capacity to do that something that God blesses that and sanctifies. And then you can do it right or do it in God consciousness, where others are being benefited, you're being benefited, the purpose of the Lord is being served, although we have an impetus. Brahma had an impetus, demigods have an impetus, we have an impetus to do something. And then there's a particular something we have an impetus to do. The lesson is, fascinating prayers are offered by the demigods in order to become able to perform that which we have an impetus to do. And the first two verses, this is just review to bring you up to speed for the morning's verses. Immediately their focus goes upon the Lord's lotus feet. Because they're servants, they want to serve his interest, so they're meditating upon his lotus feet. I'll just read. O Lord, your lotus feet are like an umbrella for the surrendered souls, protecting them from all miseries of material existence. All the sages under that shelter, the shelter of the umbrella of your lotus feet, throw off all material miseries. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet. The all material miseries, this umbrella is protecting one from a shower. Normally umbrellas protect one from rain. But this is a shower of material miseries. And one under that umbrella is protected from the shower of material miseries. And the material miseries are referenced earlier, adiatmaka, adidaivaka, adibhautika, kleshas. You know this from Bhagavad Gita and other places, nectar devotion. There are miseries of material existence that go along with creation. So to be protected from the miseries, that's the house of detention part of the prison house. It's miserable. It's not nice to be in a prison. I visited a prison once. I wasn't imprisoned, but I was visiting a prisoner, and it was a high security prison. I was to meet the person. It was a devotee who, from South America, who did something and ended up in a prison. So I had to go to there's a minister. To get to the minister's chamber or place, They're like these big iron, like walls of bars. And so you have to wait, you get security clearance, you're with somebody, and the gate lifts, you step in, and the gate comes down. That's it. You're in. You're not getting out. And then go to another set of gates, wait for more clearance, the gate lifts. You go in, the gate comes down. Uh-oh. Hope this guy standing next to me doesn't leave me, because I don't want to stay in this place. And, you know, these tough-looking guys looking at me like, or looking at each other like, you know, okay. And then, you know, a couple more of those, and you went into the chaplain's office. And the chaplain described to me, you know, what it's like being a chaplain in a prison. He said, it's he went like this, you know, it's dangerous. This was some years ago, but he mentioned that one of the persons who he was giving pastoral counseling to was helping him with his garden, because, you know, there's a little patch outside of where his office was, where there's some grassy area, and he thought it might be good therapy for one of the prisoners to help him with his garden, so he was helping with his garden. In the course of time, the prisoner confided, he was in jail for something else, but he confided that he had committed serial murders, and he had buried the bodies of his victims in such and such places. And it was all over the news that they had found bodies of ladies or women or something in Long Island in the back of somebody's yard, but they didn't know who did it. And, you know, this guy just informed that he did it. And he identified where the bodies were. And, you know, that some of them they had found, and then where the other ones were. So, like, this is the guy that he's got coming in to, like, help him with his garden. And who knows what might, you know, pin might turn and what might happen. It's, you know, being in a prison is not a comfortable situation. And being in the material world is not a comfortable situation. It's a type of prison. It's got more security than those iron bars that came down. But the message of the demigods is that the miseries of material existence are protected, and the sages, this is important because it connects with this morning's verse, sages throw far away the miseries of material existence. All sages under that shelter throw off all material misery. So it's with knowledge, what it's getting to is knowledge and detachment. And then it becomes explicit. And what's the source of knowledge and detachment? The lotus feet of the Lord, taking shelter there. Then the next verse is the contrast. There are those that don't know about your lotus feet, or they don't take shelter of your lotus feet, and therefore they're overwhelmed by the threefold miseries. And the threefold miseries have some direct relation with the process of creation, and I'm not going to go there because it takes a while to explain it. But the cause and the effect and the doer. Karya, karana, kartra. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita verse, karya, karana, kartra, ve, prakatir, hetra, uchate, purushaksuka, dukkha, nam. So, karya is the cause. Karana is that which is caused, the effect. And kartra is to do, the doer. So the demigods are the doers. and that sequence of things that are cause and effect, because it's all coming from material nature. So the demigods are also a product of material nature, and they have an impetus to like rule the creation that Brahma makes, but they feel themselves unable to do so. So they're praying to the Lord's lotus feet to offer shelter, so the miseries of material existence and the attachment, which is the root of that, is ignorance. Invariably, Prabhupada explained, the root cause of ignorance, excuse me, the root cause of suffering is ignorance. The root cause of all suffering is ignorance. So, to cast away miseries or suffering, one needs the opposite of ignorance. You need knowledge. And where do you get that knowledge? In a dark place, where do you get light? Well, not from the dark place itself, something outside of the dark place itself is how you can get some light. So, or real knowledge is something that the verses are saying. It comes from your lotus feet, or it comes from the Supreme Lord, and you approach the Supreme Lord by approaching his lotus feet. You approach humbly. Okay, so that's background. Here's this morning's verse. Two verses. The lotus feet of the Lord are by themselves the shelter of all places of pilgrimage. What are places of pilgrimage become places of pilgrimage because the Lord performed pastimes there, like Vrindavan, place of pilgrimage, or Mathura or Dwarka in relation to Krishna, or Mayapur or Jagannath Puri are common, whatever the place of pilgrimage, because the Lord has performed some pastime there. And so the shelter of the places of pilgrimage are meant to purify people, pilgrims that go there. You go to a pilgrimage place for purification. The shelter of the places of pilgrimage, which are shelter for persons who are pilgrims, is the Lord's lotus feet. He's the shelter of the places of all places of pilgrimage. The great clear-minded sages, this is poetry to the max, the great clear-minded sages carried by the wings of the Vedas also search after the nest of your lotus face. It's explained in the purport. Some of them surrender to your lotus feet at every step by taking shelter of the best of the rivers, the Ganges, which can deliver one from sinful reactions. You do, doctor? Don't go too fast. Take your time. If you like poetry, I can read the paragraph that Prabhupada expands the poetic imagery. There's lotuses, there's swans, there's wings that are compared to the Vedas. So the swan can fly by using his wings, and he makes his nest in the lotus. Sometimes he goes away from the lotus, but then he comes back to the lotus for rest by the use of his wings. So the purpose of the Vedas is to bring one to that place of sanctity and peace and tranquility and beauty. And sages are like those swans that move about in that way. But they have shelter. And the shelter is the lotus feet of the Lord. they find peace and like a lotus, like this, the world of the lotus, where there's sanctity and tranquility and peace and harmony. And they're accessing that through the agency of the Vedas, but the shelter that the Vedas bring them to is the lotus feet of the Lord. They're sages, so that means they're wise, they have knowledge of the scriptures. That knowledge of the scriptures is like their wings that carry them to the lotus-like lotus feet of the Lord. And then his lotus face is also mentioned. Next verse. And the Ganges enters into this world again through the agency of the Lord's lotus feet. Vamana, we observed his appearance day on Sunday. So Vamana, with his second step, his body had become so large, his foot pierced through the coverings of the universe, and the causal ocean came through that opening in the universe. And that, as that water descended, it's the spiritual water, and it comes down in the form of the Ganges, having washed the lotus, like Abhishek, having washed the lotus feet of Vamanadeva. So it's purifying, sanctifying and purifying. So very succinctly, Prabhupada writes at the end, even Sripad Shankaracharya recommended that a little knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita and the drinking of a little quantity of Ganges water can save one from the punishments of Yamaraj. In the poetry section of the purport, Prabhupada is saying that the Vedas, especially Bhagavad Gita, because it's spoken directly by Krishna, all the Vedas are emanations from the Supreme Lord Narayan. Bhagavad Gita specifically, because it's so accessible, the language is so accessible that everyone can understand. It's more easily understood. So there's three verses so far focusing on the Lord's lotus feet. There's one more, and I want to read the purport for that one. Simply by hearing about your lotus feet with eagerness and devotion, and by meditating upon them within the heart, one at once becomes enlightened with knowledge, and on the strength of detachment, one becomes pacified. We must therefore take shelter of the sanctuary of your lotus feet. I'll read the purport, but I want to fix the context again. The context is doing something. In this case, it's demigods managing the affairs of the creation. Or it can be Brahma before he begins engineering the universe, or it can be us before we undertake some a day where we're going to do something, or a portion of our life we're going to do a larger stretch of something, or our life that's undertaking something. Before we commence something, there's this example by the demigods to cleanse our consciousness, to qualify ourselves to do that with proper vision, proper empowerment, proper strength, proper purity, proper knowledge and detachment. And the way to achieve all those desirable things, they're saying, is meditating on the Lord's lotus feet. In the purport, there's strong emphasis on knowledge and detachment, in the whole of the Vedic literature, Gyan and Vairagya, it's like that couplet is pervasive. Knowledge and detachment. But the lesson here is that knowledge and detachment naturally come from bhakti, from devotion. Where there's devotion, you'll have knowledge. And when there's proper knowledge, you'll have detachment. When you have detachment, you have purity. You know, that the impurity is discharged. You let go of impurity. And what's left? It's not zero, it's purity. A purified soul. And what is that? So, and that purified soul just continues serving the lotus feet of the Lord. But it starts with serving the lotus feet of the Lord, or fixing oneself upon the lotus feet of the Lord. And how do you do that? That's in the last paragraph. It's connection with a spiritual master that introduces you to the Lord's lotus feet, and he brings you to the Lord's lotus feet. And the instructions of the spiritual master manifest that position, the meditation upon or attachment to the Lord's lotus feet. Here's the purport. The miracles of meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord with eagerness and devotion are so great that no other process can compare to it. The minds of materialistic persons are so disturbed that it is almost impossible for them to search after the Supreme Truth by personal regulative endeavors. So, there's karmis. So one of the things with karmis is you regulate the senses, you regulate your activity, certain things you do, certain things you don't. It's like, you know, functioning under the government, there's regulations. You want to drive, you have to get, you have so many things to get a driver's license. So many things. Not just take a course, but so many things you have to do. Pass an exam. You have to have so many kinds of ID, because you're under the regulation of the government. You want a government-issued ID. So, that's, you know, there's following regulations help one that's a materialistic person become less suffering, more happy. But to know the Supreme Truth by those endeavors, not possible. But even such materialistic men, with a little eagerness for hearing about the transcendental name, fame, qualities, etc., can surpass all other methods of attaining knowledge and detachment. And he expands that statement. The conditioned soul is attached to the bodily concept of the self, and therefore he's in ignorance. Culture of knowledge, culture of self-knowledge, can bring about detachment from material affection. And without such detachment, there's no meaning to knowledge. So, suffering. No means out of that suffering. Just by karma kanda, by regulation of work. Certainly not attaining shelter of the Supreme. But those that are engaged in the process of self-knowledge, cultivation of self-knowledge, not just academic things, but hearing and applying spiritual teachings, it awakens the capacity for knowledge. And when that awakened state is there, then less of an attraction, a detachment for material affinity, material enjoyment, will follow. His point is, there's no meaning to, quote, knowledge without detachment. There's no meaning to being a, quote, professor, if one's a highly learned person, if one's personal life is filled with sense gratification, there's no meaning to it. And, you know, he would point to, you know, PhDs or persons who have vast learning. If their human, if their personal conduct is abominable, what's the meaning of that vast learning? Or say it the other way, how is it possible you can have vast learning and abominable conduct? Because that vast learning is not what real knowledge is. Real knowledge, real knowledge starts with character. But because there isn't such education, we have, it's embarrassing. I remember Bhaktivedanta Swami conducted, when we had one of our Memorial Weekend retreats, he was a featured speaker, and one of the things he spoke about was, it was a catchy title, I forget how he called it, but something like, the problem of sex and our leadership, or something. It was far more catchy. But his point was, with example after example after example after example, that we have so many problems with leaders that can't control their senses. And it's so embarrassing for the society. You know, our Bill Clinton episode, what a distraction of the whole nation, of the whole world, focusing on what did Bill Clinton do with whatever her name was, Monica something or other. And, you know, it's not just Bill Clinton, it's he was giving example after example after example after example. And following that seminar, I was paying attention to whenever I saw, you know, the Attorney General, somebody over here and somebody over there and somebody over there, just, you know, can't control their senses. Some promiscuity, some extramarital something, prostitution, something, something, and it just goes on and on and on and on. Not just in the political arena, you know, without going into it, just it's persons in high places, they're honored so much that they become proud, and when they become proud, look out for the fall. And it happens. So it's not that they're the only ones that can't control their senses. Nobody can. Just catches everybody's attention. So we have persons that are revered within society that can't control themselves. And the society is made up of people that can't control themselves. So they have as leaders people that can't control themselves. And it's, where is the society going? Anyway, real knowledge must be followed by detachment. Without detachment, there's no meaning to knowledge. The most stubborn attachment for material enjoyment is sex life. One who is attached to sex life is to be understood as devoid of knowledge. He says it again, knowledge must be followed by detachment. That is the way of self-realization. These two essentials for self-realization, knowledge and detachment, become manifest very quickly if one performs devotional service to the lotus feet of the Lord. Like the silver bullet, or, you know, the great commercial, that the medicine that cures material disease, the medicine of the lotus feet of the Lord, because through that service, through that taking shelter, one gets knowledge. This is expanding that verse. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janayati Ashu vairagyam jnanam cha yadahaitakam, by devotional service to Krishna, causelessly knowledge and detachment result. That's, you know, one of the early verses in the second chapter, first canto, and it just like it's being amplified here. Knowledge and detachment. And if you want to do your service, your mission of life, your work, your day-to-day activity with a steady and effective contemplation, knowledge and detachment are necessary. Attachment that the lotus feet brings that knowledge and detachment. The word dhira is very significant in this verse, or in this connection. A person who is not disturbed, even in the presence of a cause of disturbance, is called dhira. Expand that. Prabhupada explains, well, if you remain undisturbed, when there's no cause for disturbance, that's not something wonderful. But when you remain undisturbed, when there's cause for disturbance, that's something wonderful. That is called dhira. So that's detachment. The connection here is you're a demigod, or you're Lord Brahma, or you're whoever you are, and you have something to do today, and unfortunately it's the material world and there's a disturbance. Now, how to remain undisturbed even when there's a disturbance? Detachment. Because there's a higher principle. The higher principle is being attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. If you're not attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, you'll be disturbed by the disturbance. And then you'll struggle. You know, what about this? Oh, I shouldn't do that, but look at that. And an endless flow of mental stuff about the disturbance. I'll fix the problem. Just, you know, get into a controller mode. But we're not controllers. We're servants. So one can remain undisturbed when confronted with disturbance of unlimited proportion. One can remain undisturbed. I mean, the disturbance can be of unlimited proportion, provided you have shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. You have shelter in devotional service, in a spiritual conception. Right away, Prabhupada takes it again to sex life. Sri Jamunacharya says, since my heart has been overwhelmed by devotional service of Lord Krishna, I cannot think of sex life. And if thoughts of sex come upon me, I at once feel disgust. Unquote. A devotee of the Lord becomes elevated, an elevated dhira, by the simple process of meditating in eagerness on the lotus feet of the Lord. He's taking that particular example because it's so pernicious. And but it can be anything, you know, whatever it is that causes disturbance to the mind. The temperature, or somebody says something nasty, or something out there in the world of duality comes your direction that you don't like, or you too much like, and it takes you from away from material desire, can take one away from remaining sober or peaceful. The demigods are praying for that peaceful condition. Last paragraph. Devotional service entails being initiated by a bona fide spiritual master and following his instruction in regard to hearing about the Lord. Such a bona fide spiritual master is accepted by regularly hearing from him about the Lord. Sounds really simple, doesn't it? Such a bona fide spiritual master is accepted by regularly hearing from him about the Lord. That is, you know, something follows that. The improvement of knowledge and detachment can be perceived by devotees as an actual experience. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore strongly recommended this process of hearing from a bona fide devotee, and by following this process one can achieve the highest result, conquering all other methods. So, I find it's amazing that in the midst of describing the process of creation, we get all this. But that's Vyasadeva, and that's Srimad Bhagavatam. The practical application may not be so clear. It's like with this abstract creation thing. But it applies to our practical everyday life. Literally, everyday life. By design, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, that this material world, it has its unpleasantries. Some of the unpleasantries, we can shrug our shoulders, no problem. Some of the unpleasantries gives us pause. Some of the unpleasantries, it really aggravates us. And, you know, so it goes. Now what do you do? Because you have something to do today. But then there's this something that's aggravating you, or a whole bunch of somethings that are aggravating you. Or someone very dear to you, they're in great difficulty. We're not to become hard-hearted and callous and, you know, that way survive in this I don't care program. So how do you remain like a sensitive person and get through your day or get through life and not be just distracted by the disturbance that's out there? There has to be some shelter. The shelter is not just like, you know, anesthetizing your brain, making it dull, putting it to sleep so you're numb, but seeing things, that there's this nice description of seeing earlier verses, seeing the hand of the Lord within all things, because it's there. I mean, you wouldn't have creation without the Supreme Lord. So when creation is manifest, the Supreme Lord is there, or one can access him. So that detachment, which isn't I don't care, but it's a detachment, it's so you can function with the proper way of serving the Lord. Detachment and knowledge come from making that connection. And connection is made through hearing properly from the right source. There's more about the lotus feet tomorrow morning, so we'll end there. Any discussion? Yeah. Go ahead. Bhakti Dara here.
Praying to Lord for the shelter of lotus feet, Lord's lotus feet. So like here I want to know, like, this is the process, like here we are seeking the shelter of Lord's lotus feet, but praying to the Lord, like, this is the, I mean, here like in this description, Lord's lotus feet is mentioned as the sages. So like when I'm thinking, like, they're seeking the shelter of the Lord, sages, but they're, like, praying to Lord. So, I'm kind of wondering, is it the process of this clarity on that?
I'm not sure what you're asking. Are you asking, are we supposed to offer prayers like this?
I mean, here the demigods, I mean, Lord's feet is mentioned in the sages, no matter in this description.
Lord's lotus feet is mentioned in stages?
As the sages. Sages are giving the shelter as an umbrella. That's what.
You're saying stages or
sages?
You're kind of mixing things, but go ahead.
So, like, here we are seeking the shelter of the sages, but, like, we are praying to Lord for that shelter. So, kind of wanting to make that connection.
You understand what he's asking?
Taking shelter of the sages or the instructions of the sages, is that they are praying to the Lord? That's what I understand.
Is it the same as the
shelter of the sages? Is A equal to B? Is that what you're asking?
No, Maharaj. Like, here, demigods, they're saying taking shelter of sages.
No.
Lord's.
No. No. That's where you're mixing things.
Yeah.
I'll read the verse again. Ready? Your lotus feet are like an umbrella for surrendered souls. So they're surrendered souls. And your lotus feet are like an umbrella, protecting us from material miseries. Separate, all the sages under that shelter throw off all material miseries. There's different groups under that umbrella. Some throw off by knowledge and detachment, some just by taking shelter, the umbrella protects them. Material miseries are not harming. Okay.
Like you were saying, that to overcome this problem of uncontrolled senses or things coming from that, we need to have knowledge and detachment. So, like, in this practical...
That's not exactly what I said. Your premise is not what I said. Detachment is a subset of detachment is the detachment from the misery, but detachment from the misery means detachment from the root of the misery. The root of the misery is ignorance. So knowledge doesn't come just by reading a book, even a spiritual book. We can read spiritual books and still be ignorant. I mean, still be doing ignorant things, born of ignorance, because theoretical knowledge is not enough. Okay, so you want to back up and rephrase your question.
Question is, like, I mean, what kind of feeling, like, falling down in the practical application of the instructions, like, in, you know, like, I'm trying to apply the instruction.
Okay.
And, like, if I fall down again, like, for example, control eating, and, like, I go back to the, like, I mean, eating more, or, like, you know, like that thing is going on.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, how do we, like, still...
It's practice. let's say, the essence of spiritual life is connecting in love with the Supreme. So we're not there. We're like, you know, in a diseased condition. So disoriented. We have some idea of what the position should be. So we practice it. But when we practice it, we're still in this conditioned or diseased condition, you know, situation. So we'll apply it and then not apply it and apply it and not apply it and apply it and not apply it. Because of our conditioning, we won't apply it or we'll be inconsistent. That's called anishtita bhakti or unsteady devotion. So what's the remedy? Keep applying it. The common example is walking propensity is there in a small child, and just by continuing to practice walking, the ability to walk comes out. It's there. I just had this recent experience of learning to walk again, kind of. I had a back problem, and certain muscles were just not working because they were tight. So, you know, even taking a step, I felt like I'm either this really old man, although I'm not a really old man, or a little baby, and I'm not a little baby. It's just like muscles weren't working properly. I had to go very slowly. Very slowly. Very slowly. And then, you know, sit down. And then slowly. So, but confidence was, you know, the walking propensity is there. I just have to let the muscles get used to being coordinated again. Or Jayapataka Maharaj had to learn all over again. Because he had that stroke that affected his parts of his brain, and some motor functions just aren't working. So he has to learn how to walk again. And it's very challenging. Because, you know, he's this powerful person that has to learn how to walk again. He was describing to me, aside from, you know, the physical therapy, he's very diligent in doing things that the therapist gives him. It got to the stage where he could walk with support. You know, one somebody on this side, somebody on that side. And, you know, the muscle is there, it's just not coordinated. You know, the brain is not coordinating the thing with the muscles. So he has to practice it. So, step by step, and then, you know, 3 times a week he was told to go to a pool, and he just, like, walk through the pool, because the water is already supporting his body. And you have to go slowly, but that's okay. Slowly is fine. Just let the muscles get used to walking and the coordination. So he's not at the stage where he can presently walk on his own, but, you know, the propensity is there. It's just the coordination of the whole thing. So, same. Controlling the senses, controlling eating, or controlling sex urge, or controlling anger, or control, you know, the various pushings. The spiritual capacity is there. It's just practice. And we have to practice regularly. And the spiritual nature is higher than the material conditioned nature. And with that trust, confidence, continue to practice. It's with knowledge and it's the strength that comes from knowledge and detachment. That's connecting with Krishna. There are disciplines, even besides spiritual disciplines, there are, you know, worldly disciplines where like martial arts, where persons can, you know, become very, very, very severely disciplined. But that's also out of control because, you know, there's no shelter. Let some time pass or some circumstance arise that just beyond the threshold of the control of that discipline, and, the, you know, the person loses it. So what's needed really is the shelter. As you're practicing controlling the senses, controlling eating and whatever it is, make sure, like the demigods, that your attention is going to the source of strength. It's the ability giver himself. Not just, you know, your own prowess. Anything else? Yeah.
You said how you practice, how you go through with the practices. Like, wouldn't it be an answer to request a desire as opposed to, because if I continuously practice, it becomes my habit.
Yeah.
But if I request for the desire, then it becomes
your being.
And it also becomes easier, and it becomes what feels right, and it becomes natural. And it then is no longer just me consistently doing something because I feel as though I'm supposed to, but if I have that innate, if I request for that innate desire to go about that practice.
Nice point. This is the inside-out approach. Two things. One is to, from a devotional perspective, not just a discipline perspective, but from a devotional perspective, we have the soul is within this body, and the soul is animating, gives the body life. In the absence of the soul, there's no life. So the animating me is the soul. The soul has natural propensities, intrinsic, within not only within my nature, but within who I really am, the animating soul. So there are the Sanskrit word sadhana, there are practices that like resonate with the soul. They're of the nature of the soul. It's different than, let's say, practicing the piano or typing or driving a car or some motor skill where it's like an acquired, this is, you know, of the soul, a different kind of nature. So sadhana practices or devotional practices are recognizing there are things that awaken that seed of spiritual consciousness within, and by so doing it's not just like repeating and repeating and repeating and repeating, and now I can ride my bicycle or I can drive my car or I can do some motor skill. It's from within, so it's more than just a conditioned thing, replacing that conditioning with another conditioning. It's something that's of the soul. If one is moving on a spiritual path, it isn't inside out. That is to say, the practice resonates with the natural or innate desire of the soul. So it's also an inside-out approach. But this other thing, that your particular point, in his case, there already is a desire. You're speaking rather than just modify the behavior, what about asking for the desire? He's got the desire. And there's this other conditioning influence on him that says, or results in, that desire becomes sometimes stronger, sometimes weaker, and when it's weaker, he doesn't act on that desire, he acts on the conditioning. Then the desire becomes stronger, and he acts on the desire instead of the conditioning. And then the desire diminishes and becomes conditioned behavior again. Too much eating. The food's too good. I just... And then I suffer afterwards, or I have digestion problems. I can't stay focused like I would if I controlled my eating. So there's already a desire. And the desire isn't just that particular thing, that's, you know, the eating tendencies. That's connected to a higher desire. The higher desire is, I'd like to be in the consciousness where I'm acting in my relationship with God and doing things for His pleasure, not just for the pleasure of my senses, because it looks good or tastes good, it smells good, it feels good. And so I do it regardless of my relationship with God. I want that relationship. The desire is already there from the inside. So now, once that desire is already there, what to do? How to amplify that desire? Now they'll go back to the prior. There's sadhana, there's activities that... Well, one of the criterion of just on this eating principle is to take only that which has been offered to Krishna, so prasadam. And that in itself, because it's sanctified food, that will purify one's existence, and that's going to amplify that desire. I don't know if I'm satisfying your question, but try.
No, completely.
Okay.
Yes,
okay. I'll go back and support what you said. Something that, at least if I understood you correctly, something that I say regularly is, we are not the International Society for Behavior Modification Incorporated. It's not just, you know, how to modify behaviors, and it's like a set of rules of how to modify behaviors, and you do it right, and you, the bell rings, you get your prize, you win instead of lose. That's not, it's consciousness, it's the consciousness that's behind what we do. That's where attention has to go, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So how to amplify consciousness of Krishna in whatever we do. So take eating. So how does consciousness of Krishna become amplified in the process of eating? If I'm just like stuffing myself, I'm thinking of my senses, I'm not thinking of God, just gratifying myself. So how do I stay in the consciousness of this is an act that's meant to bring me closer to God? I want that. The desire is there. How do I strengthen and amplify that desire?
Can you, I would hope that it's a progressive type thing, so that what you're saying is progressive. So if I develop the love for it, because I love my sister so much, I would never harm her.
Right.
That if I develop the love for God and for pulling myself away from delving into my flesh desires, then I would be able to get to a point and reach a state where it would be complete wholeness.
Yes.
Yep.
By amplifying this spiritual vibration within, automatically the other subsides. By spiritual well-being, the material well-being is addressed. Got a thorough answer to your question. Anything else? Yes?
I have a question about
in practicing spiritual conceptions, I sometimes get confused whether I'm just putting my mind off and just neglecting it, or I'm really addressing the material conceptions, whether I'm addressing it properly or I'm just putting it off for time being.
Well, just to be on the safe side, you can probably say probably a mix. And, you know, how to evaluate how, you know, where's the meter on the mix? How much is on the spiritual side and how much is on the neglecting, ignoring material side? Steadiness is one. Satisfaction is another. That it's to say steady means it's not circumstantial. It doesn't depend on today this and tomorrow that. Steady. Not circumstance based. It's from the soul based. And that's to have steadiness, it requires a degree of purity. Before you come to nishtha stage, there's an artha nivritti stage, so there'll be some unsteadiness prior to that. Inclined to say something about connecting with chanting, just like with chanting. You know when you're just making a sound and when you're paying attention. And you also know the difference between just chanting and chanting with feeling. So, yes, you know, you measure those things with regard to applying yourself in your devotional service with a spiritual conception, and on some basic level, you know. And because we're not highly advanced beings, there's a mix. So aside from, you know, putting yourself on the sincerity, spiritual conception meter versus the other, just continue to strive. See the standards that are set by elevated souls, perfected souls, and keep moving in that direction. Then you're safe. Okay? Yes. Yes.
In case of this devotional service, like when you said knowledge and detachment, and that comes through in devotional service, I feel also that in devotional service sometimes attachment comes into the devotional service, and with that, like, there are very subtle attachments and we think we are detached, but at least I might not be detached. So how is it that we recognize such attachments and
how is it that you, what was the last part?
How is it that we recognize such
subtle recognize?
Yes.
How do we recognize attachment?
The subtle attachment which comes through devotional service. We think we are doing, and but we are actually attached to that service.
Well, when you say through devotional service, it's by that you mean in spite of devotional service. We become attached to, like, you know, There was a program last night, and it's, you know, a lot of efforts were made to make a nice program. And I'm sure we didn't notice all the things that she noticed that didn't go the way that she had hoped that they would go, because it's always like that. You know, we're planning a retreat, and we have a certain plan, or have a Rath Yatra or a Janmashtami, and the people that are the organizers, they know all the things that went wrong. And some people know some of the things that went wrong, but the organizers know all the things that went wrong. So, now, how do you feel about those things that went wrong? That, you know, there can be attachment. You know, this didn't, and that person, and me, and circumstance, and just, you know, instead of addressing the thing that needs to be addressed with a cool, clear head, you know, contemplation, or somebody. So, besides the examples, the principles are staying in the mood of service. Attachment can be detected for sure when the mood of service changes and something else starts to take over instead of the mood of service, like control or retaliation or anger, or, you know, something that's other than the mood of service. Then you know you're attached. Well, first is to recognize. That was the first question that you asked. How do you recognize? So this is a Jayadvaita Swami answer. There are four R's. You heard the four R's? Recognition, regret, rectification, reinstatement. It's not scriptural, is it? Jayadvaita Swami Purana. But it flows naturally. A big problem is when subtle attachments arise, we don't detect them. We don't even recognize them. And when we recognize them, this is a Vaishnava principle, you regret. I left my shelter, I left Krishna. Here I am in this other space being attached, thinking I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, and so on. Regret. It's purifying. Not like wallow in lamentation, but regret that deviation. Then, rectify the situation. So that was your question, how do we rectify that? I'm saying you start with the first two, then go to the third. You just do the opposite. You put something on the other side of the pan scale. When you read First Canto, Chapter 9, around verses 29 through 35, something like that, Bhishma Deva is giving cures for certain material bad qualities. And essentially, it's the pan scale program. For anger, practice forgiveness. Something over here, put something over there. You know, like, not just like be in agony and trouble yourself over the fact that, you know, you became angry. Put something over here. Cultivate this. Like, you know, with same with the offenses against chanting. Inattentiveness, practice attentiveness. Offending the devotees, praise and serve the devotees. So consciously do just the opposite. Pride has entered my heart. Take the opposite. Take the position of simply serving humbly, abandoning pride. Cultivate. You know, like this, I guess I'm going to get the politically correct view down after visiting colleges a little bit, the inside-out approach. This is exactly what that was. From the desire that I this is something I recognize, and I know that I don't want it to be part of my conditioned life, so now desiring to connect properly with in my relationship with Krishna, let me act in that relationship with Krishna consciously, deliberately. Cultivate. That's the rectification. And then the reinstatement is that then you're healthy again. Okay?
Yes.
You have a specific question? You got a little bit of question mark on your forehead. Like.
This is clear. What you told about recognition and then going towards a regret, that might make some sense.
Okay. Don't stay there. Keep moving. Because regret can just be another ignorance. We're indulging in lamentation. So ignorance isn't counteracted by more ignorance. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, I'll say two things. Some regret just comes through what your explanation. Just hearing you explain what you recognized, I hear some regret. I mean, it's not the strongest signal, but I hear it. And then the other comment is, it has to be substantial and genuine, because otherwise it's just going to repeat and repeat and repeat. And it may not repeat in the same, you know, pattern, but it's going to repeat. It's going to come out. Whatever's inside comes out. It's going to come out. Until, you know, you put your foot down and say, I'm going to stop this. I don't like it. Otherwise it'll just repeat. So it's one level to recognize, you know, I'm banging my head against the wall. It's another is to say, I think I should stop banging my head against the wall. You know, it's hurting my head and hurting the wall. So it's a step. And then, you know, doing something else instead of banging your head against the wall. Find a path that's more suitable. When similar circumstances arise. And you have to make that path. Like, walk on that path a bunch. Then you have a path. Because before there, it's just like jungle. And that's where this practice comes in, that she wanted to make sure it's just not just a behavior thing. when you're connecting from your heart. Because you want to please Krishna. But, you know, we don't want relationships to get, you know, weirded out because of this absent thing that goes on sometimes. Right? That's very incomplete, unsatisfying. Very unsatisfying. It's not going to change the situation. It's service. That's like, you know, his question of how do we detect when material attachment has entered into the arena of devotional service. And my answer was, the litmus test is the mood of service there. If the mood of service is not present, then it's some other. The motive of, I don't like to suffer. You know, even if it's, I don't like the other people to suffer, it's because, it spoils my happiness in my relationship with the person because, I'm not enjoying anymore. It's selfish. It's good that you caught that, because it's the world of difference between material and spiritual world. The spiritual world is a world of service. But it's a higher happiness. It's not devoid of happiness. It's a higher happiness. More deeply satisfying. But, it's not... It's foreign to us. It's not common to us. It's I want to enjoy. That's our program. That's why we're here. In the spiritual world is I want to serve Krishna. And my enjoyment is serving Krishna, whatever that means. However I'm inconvenienced. There's no inconvenience if it's... And that's the... Repeatedly what we hear in the descriptions of the devotees of Krishna, the wives of the brahmanas, they put at risk everything just because they wanted to serve Krishna. The coward boys were hungry, so they brought things. They left their families. They knew they were going to get, the sauce. They're going to get some heat for doing that. But because Krishna was pleased, their husbands actually, when they came back, they honored them. Oh, you're more advanced than us. Anyway, and the gopis and the coward boys, and this elevated condition is my inconvenience is not the question. My happiness is Krishna's happiness. So keep, that's the light, and keep moving towards the light. That's the standard. And so regret can be, that's not my standard. My standard is, I don't want to suffer. I want to enjoy. That's my standard. So I'm not there, but I see the light. It's there. We have these examples of these personalities that are like this. And the personality of Godhead is so merciful and purifying that even if it's, Dhruva Maharaj, even if it's, I want to get back. It's not just happiness, I want to get back. And to get back means, Lord Vishnu, all right, Lord Vishnu, help me. I want to get back. I want a big kingdom. Better. better than my father's. What to speak of, I am the inheritor of my father's throne. Better than my father. Better than my father's father. Better than Lord Brahma. I mean, child talk. Because that means the spiritual world. Better than Lord Brahma. So, even if we're in the position where it's self-interested, because the object, because the shelter of our approach is so pure, so supremely pure, we'll become purified. But stages of moving towards that purity is let go of the selfishness, as Dhruva did, and come to the position of just wanting to serve. It's part of the maturing of the creeper of devotion. It comes. That's the good news. You plant a fruit tree. I've shared this before. Like, my father planted a peach tree in our backyard. I remember as a kid going looking at the tree. Where are the peaches? And I was told, in time, next year, where are the peaches? And then finally these little green things. You know, that's not a peach, that's a little green thing. Where's the peaches? A couple more years. You know, then it was like filled with peaches. Juicy peaches. Woo. It took some time. It's just, you know, because you just make sure the water is there and sunlight is there and no animals come and rip it up or something, and it can produce fruit. So the bhakti process will produce fruit in the course of time, and we have to be vigilant and to go from the selfish to the beyond selfish. Because serve we must, so we can serve our own selfish desires, so we can serve something higher. Someone should be pleased by our service. Let Krishna be pleased by our service. Includes our relationships and how we do things. Let Krishna be pleased. Like last night when you were singing. You know, your singing is very nice and appreciated by everyone, and just subjectively, the more that you can be thinking as you're singing, let me just be connected with Krishna, let Krishna be pleased. May, as an instrument of Krishna, bring consciousness of Krishna into my heart and therefore into the quality of my singing. Like one of the Soul Connection kids was sharing this, you know, they're on stage now. They have lots of opportunity to sing. And they sing very, very nicely. But they're sharing, you know, I'm thinking about how nicely I'm singing while I'm singing, and I know that's contaminating. Although the melody is, you know, Badahari melody, great. You know, the good drummer, and it's like, you know, the devotees are appreciating it. And I'm thinking, and false ego. I know that's not right. How do I not be in that consciousness? It's, you know, the enjoyer, the controller, my happiness is, you know, we're at the center. And, you know, Krishna's at the center. Things, what I'm saying here is, things that you like to do, see that Krishna is in the center. And then things that are sometimes more challenging, it'll be easier to think of keeping Krishna in the center. Anything else? You okay? Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Sorry, I was wrong about something, Maharaj.